Welcome to Hockey Night in New York, where Islanders hockey always reigns supreme. Whether you were raised at the barn in Uniondale or born in the stable at Belmont, Hockey Night in New York is your home for all things Isles. Now, let's drop the puck and get this party started.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Hockey Night in New York. Welcome to the program, everyone. It is Friday, April 5th, 2024, coming at you live from the magical Floored Media here in Rockville Center. Big show coming up for you tonight. The New York Islanders are back in a playoff spot, at least for now. We'll see what happens tonight. But we got Rachel Dory, ESPN analyst, joining us later. Looking forward to that. My name is Sean Cuthbert. With me, as always, is Mr. Stefan Rosner. Stefan, how do you do?
Remember that one time we had an earthquake?
I do remember that. I feel like it was recent.
Yeah.
Hopefully, how'd you do with that, buddy?
I was on the couch doing work,
okay,
and it started shaking, and I'm going, what on earth
is
happening right now? My couch is moving, and
it
I don't weigh a lot.
The earth was happening.
I don't weigh a lot. Exactly.
That's what was happening.
It was quaking.
Yeah, it was.
It kind of is funny. The Islanders get into a playoff spot, and the world's about to end.
Yeah. It's kind of a sign, kind of weird. I mean, the world is ending. We've got a solar eclipse coming on Monday.
Right.
A lot of crazy things happening, but thank you so much for tuning in to twitch.tv/HockeyNightNY. And before we dive into the show, I'm going to tell you about our wonderful sponsors, starting with Blue Line Deli and Bagel. Satisfy your hunger at 719 West Jericho Turnpike in Huntington and 217 Carlton Avenue in East Islip. Check out the menu at BlueLineDeli.com. Also proud to be sponsored by Main Street Board Game Cafe. Find your crowd and unplug your game at 307 Main Street in Huntington Village. And also happy to be sponsored by Razor and Kniff, attorneys at law ready to fight for you. Check them out at RazorandKniff.com. That's RaiserandKniff.com for a free consultation. And of course, folks, if you're hanging out with us in the chat, make sure if you want to get any questions answered later, just hit questions brewing with your question, and we will try to get to those questions. So with the pleasantries out of the way, Stefan Rosner, the seesaw season continues for the New York Islanders. Just when you thought they were out, they're in. And then just when you think they're in, they're out. Hopefully that won't be the case with six games to go here. But they kind of control their destiny right now, right? They're a point ahead. Now, obviously, they got to keep winning hockey games. But now that they're ahead of a couple of teams, now that they're hot on the tail of Philadelphia and the Metro, they still have two options to stay in the playoffs. They got some big games coming up. We're going to talk about that later. But the Islanders have a chance here to squeak in at the end of the season where we just weren't sure where it was going to go. So we'll dive into the games, but what do you make of the week that was?
I think it got better and better as the week went on, and we'll break through each game. But I thought the first game against Philly, a lot of issues that one. Second game against Chicago, still some issues. And the third game was kind of the icing on the cake of, okay, they played the exact way they should be playing.
Mm-hmm.
Looked more like the team that was dominating on the win streak. That being said, it was the Columbus Blue Jackets, so you know you take these wins with a grain of salt. But we're at the point of the season where 2 points is 2 points. Doesn't really matter how you
For sure. And we've talked about the fact that you play a team like that this late in the season, carefree hockey, playing the role of spoilers. Maybe they're taking a little more risk, stuff like that. I mean, look, you had the goalie pilled for 3 minutes the other night, right?
Y-esque.
Yeah, exactly. So anything could happen, but they took care of business. Maybe it wasn't pretty for all 180 minutes of the three games that they played this week, but you got
a little more, 190,
sure,
181. And
yeah, change, yeah, yeah, sure, sure. But at the end of the day, they took care of business. They're back in the mix. And I'm not here to make any big proclamations because I've done that before and it's burned me in the past. So I'm just going to wait and see what happens here. We'll obviously keep tabs on the scores of the other games tonight. We obviously have some big games for the Caps, the Wings, and the Flyers playing tonight too? Or they wait until tomorrow?
Flyers are playing tonight, yep.
They are. Okay, so you got three big games there on the docket. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But yeah, look, they control their destiny here, and they're playing pretty good hockey. So let's dive in. Obviously, they get the 4-3 overtime win against Philadelphia. And it was basically another, probably a trauma situation for Islander fans watching this one, because it was kind of same old Isles, whether it's Lane or whether it's Patrick Waugh, where they have the lead, they're hanging on for dear life, Philadelphia's all over them, and it did feel like it was a matter of time, but you get within 10 seconds, and you're like, okay, maybe they're finally going to survive
here. You get within 9 seconds.
9.6, I rounded up. But yes, and of course they give up the tying goal. You don't even know at that point if they're going to get the 2 points.
Yeah.
But you already know that it hurts that they're giving up the one. We know all about the tiebreakers. We know the fact that the Islanders don't really have the regulation wins compared to the rest of the teams. I think they're one behind Detroit now, but everybody else, they pretty much got no shot if everybody stays neck and neck from now until the end of the season. So obviously a disheartening moment there for the Islanders, for the Islander fans. But they come back in overtime. Brock Nelson gets the winner early, so they kind of save everybody a little bit of stress after you go into overtime. So, and it's a big 2 points at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, this game was the Fedotov show. And this guy comes
right.
in,
yes.
has not had one, at to that point, had not had one full practice with the Flyers yet. We all, if you guys don't know the story, he comes over from Russia. He was supposed to come over earlier, but then got in, didn't serve his military, so they potentially the Russian army came in and arrested him and forced him to go to some godforsaken place, I have no idea, and spent a year
that
there. So he didn't
rough.
Play for a year.
Yeah.
Comes back this year, plays. They allow him to terminate his contract. He comes over, and obviously with Carter Hart not being there, they had a goalie issue. They were playing a guy in Ersson who was never expected to handle the workload that he had. He was struggling, and in that game, Ersson was struggling early.
Yeah.
Tortorella makes the move, and after the game, he actually apologized to Fedotov, saying, this is not how your NHL debut should have been.
Right.
But he comes in, and this guy is unreal. Unreal. You know, his first save is Barzal on a breakaway.
Yeah.
Stopping with the glove. He stops Brock Nelson's chance, and you're thinking, oh my God, this guy's 6'7", and he's not going to
allow a big boy.
A goal. Yeah. And they do get a goal. Anders Lee tip.
Right.
Very nice goal. They're huge to give him a lead at the end of the second period there.
Yep.
But then in the third, the biggest issue is that they get outshot 20-3.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's a problem. And you're watching, going, they're probably going to allow the time. They can keep sitting back like this. So they're going to allow credit to the Flyers, who obviously woke up and just essentially took control of that entire third period, where the Islanders didn't have a lot of, when they had a chance to clear, they failed, but hard on the forecheck, getting pucks up quick, getting shots on goal. They were doing what they had to do, and it paid off for them. And yes, the Islanders win in overtime, but you could tell by Nelson's lack of a celebration that, yeah, we needed the 2 points, but we really screwed us
for
ourselves
sure. right.
by giving them that 1 point.
Yeah, and we kind of talked about this a little bit before we went live, just talking about how Philadelphia ended up taking over the third period there, and whether it's a product of the team kind of locking down like they're not supposed to be, like they're talking about not doing, right, where they still want to go for the kill, they want to get that extra goal, but it really looked very Lane Lambert-esque going back to that time where they went into a shell and they were just hanging on for dear life to protect the lead. What did you see there?
Yeah, not good. And that's a confident thing. It's a mindset thing. I know Wah is trying to break that. And again, it's when you do that for...
But I mean, do you think that they actively decided to go into that shell, or it's just Philadelphia poured it on and kind of forced them into it?
I would say the message going to the third was keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then what happens is, I don't even think it's a mindset as the period's going on. I just think they get on the ice and we got to protect the lead. Now we got to add to the lead. We got to protect the lead. They knew how important that game was, which I think in their mind was defense first, which in theory, 100%, you have to play, you have to win the game and lock it down. But the Islanders' best defense under Wah is offense. Whether it's just garnering offensive zone time or getting pucks in and just forechecking hard or even pressing and aggressive on the forecheck in the neutral zone, things like that. I don't think it was a collective decision because Wah's trying to break that. But I do think that in a big game like that, they revert. We saw it in game 6 against Carolina where they had a lead in the third period and they sit back and essentially allow Carolina to get every chance. Carolina ties it. They score that, you know, that fortunate bounce goal late, stats in, and that's their season. So, yeah, they don't want to see that. But moving on to Chicago now,
yes,
it gets a little better. Yes, they allow the first goal on a bad pinch by Dobson. We'll get to Dobson in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Bad pitch by Dobson. Casey Zekas hesitates on the back check. Pellick plays a 2-on-1 pretty bad. Pass comes across. Dickinson scores.
Yeah.
And you're down. And again, they were peppering Mrazek early. It was a fantastic start for them.
Oh, yeah.
But we've seen that so many times. The Islanders get 30,000 chances in the first 5 minutes, allow one chance.
Yes.
They're down 1-0.
Yes, we did say that last week. But a dominant performance. I think I was reading that this was basically the advanced stats. Like their metrics were the best they were all season as far as carrying the play of a game. But they stuck with it, and they finally got rewarded, right? And they get a big game winner from Simon Holmstrom. We'll talk about him a little bit later, him being out of the lineup, but he gets a huge game winner there. And they exercise the second of back-to-back demon by finally, on the last one, of course, winning the second of back-to-backs against a team they're supposed to beat in Chicago. So they bank another 2 big points, and all of a sudden, you start saying to yourself, maybe they got a shot here, right?
And Sorokin had his best performance in quite some time. He faced 18 shots. He allowed a goal, 19 shots, makes 18 saves, and you could say that it wasn't a heavy workload, but I think, according to naturalstattrick.com, 10 of them were high-danger shots or high-danger chances. And after the game, you know, Horvat scores a huge goal there.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Barzal with a nifty backhand feed, which we saw against Columbus.
Right.
But after the game, Horvat spoke about, you know, just sticking with it. It's one of those games where you feel like you're never going to score, and this is what he had to say.
Definitely. I mean, you know, it seemed like we were throwing everything at him and getting a lot of chances. It was just a matter of time before it was going to go in. And, you know, sometimes in those kind of games, it's like you don't feel like you're ever going to score. So,
Yeah, so he said that there again, just stuck with it. And that's what I wanted to touch with that quote, is that maybe under Lane at some times, or even early in the WA, they were making changes. And when things weren't working, again, when you're generating chances, that's a positive sign. Yes, you need to score goals, but in a game like that, everything's working, but the puck's not going in. You're running into a hot goalie. Right. So don't change it. Eventually, you have to hope and trust in your team. I think that's the great thing about WA, is one, he's not scared to change it when he thinks he has to change it, but also he trusts the players. Like, he could have changed the lines and said, all right, we're getting the chances, but someone's got to score. We got to fix it and try to get momentum off that. But they had the momentum, and WA said, you know what? We need to win this game, second of back-to-back. We won the first game. I trust that my guys are going to come through. They come through there. Simon Holmstrom, again, benched a scratch for three straight games, come to the lineup. I spoke to him after the game, and I said, what does this do for your confidence? Yeah. And he's not a guy that speaks a lot. He's a very quiet kid, and he goes, yeah, it does a lot. When you are essentially in a must-win mode and your coach takes you out, that kind of shows he doesn't have trust in you to do what you have to do.
Right.
And I think if you asked Holmstrom, he would say he wasn't playing at his best, needs to be better. Him and Holmstrom's game and Engvall's game, when it's lacking, is kind of the same issues. Soft in certain areas along the boards, things like that. But when the coach trusts and says, okay, in a big game back-to-back, I'm going to put you in the lineup and you come through. Again, he was playing a pretty good game without the goal. But to come through, I mean, he scored against the Ducks, remember, earlier in the year.
Right.
And a huge goal. And this is not a guy that scores a lot of goals. So confidence-wise, I thought it was great. I thought Holmstrom played well again. I wanted to see how he played against Columbus, because one game, great, but you got to keep it going and stay in the lineup. I thought he was good there. Huge goal from him. And again, just sticking with the game plan is so important when the chances are coming, because mentally, if you start changing things up, that tells the players that you don't have faith that they'll figure it out. So the Islanders did that, and then we saw it again against Columbus.
For sure, and let's fast forward through that real quick before we break. You get the 4-2 win, they dominate play, big win for them, big 2 points. Sorokin a little shaky in that game, maybe we can expand on that a little bit later, but he still made the saves he needed to for them to get the win. They get the 2 points, and then here we are now.
Yeah, another situation where a goalie gets hurt early. A Russian goalie gets hurt. Tarasov comes out. In comes Jack Greaves, who had 4 NHL games under his belt. And like the Chicago game, essentially the exact same thing. Jack Greaves comes in and was unreal. But the Islanders trusted, found a way to get it done. They add the empty net goal, which was huge. Kyle Palmieri reaches 25 goals in the year. Can't say enough about what Palmieri's done, especially since Waz come
he's
in.
Been just excellent.
The definition of consistency.
Yeah,
it's just one of those seasons for Palmieri that he had to have as an Islander to essentially get the fans back on his side. It's been tough for him,
sure.
But the lineup was rolling 4 lines. You talked about the analytics after the Chicago game, Columbus game. I think they had 60-something shot attempts. It was ridiculous. They dominated pace of play, and it worked out, and they get the much-needed 2 points against the team they had to.
Exactly. This is what's encouraging, because we've seen them play games against teams like that in the past. Obviously, we've referenced the Sharks game multiple times, right?
The
That's
Sin
a big
game.
Loss. In the, yeah, the Sin game, right. But here we are when the games really count, really matter, especially because of the competition they have up, down, left, right, next to them, right? And they come in, and even though it was a little frustrating maybe for some of these, for those two games, because they weren't putting the pucks in the net that maybe they were hoping to, expecting to, but they stuck with it. They kept on top of them, dominant performances, and they end up getting the wins, and they earned them. And now they're in a position to potentially get into a playoff spot.
And before we break here, I just want to say, the Flyers game, they didn't play the 6-on-5 correctly. Chicago, they played a 6-on-5 correctly. The defense is very good, keeping things to the outsides. And then against Columbus, same thing. Nets pulled. That's what's given the Islanders a lot of issues this year, when they can't score in the empty net and they allow the goal. They're playing those situations much better, which is definitely a positive sign. Whether it's not the penalty kill, and the penalty hasn't been amazing. It's gotten some big kills recently.
Yes.
But
yes.
Even the 6-on-5 situation, you're essentially killing.
For
sure. You're killing the time there, and I think they've done a lot better in that. And that, if they do make the playoffs, that's very important. But also, just to get to the playoffs, they got to find a way to be better in those situations. And these last two games, they've really shown that.
Yeah, and hopefully getting that empty net goal even just kind of lifts a burden off of their shoulders, because it's been a long time since that happened. It doesn't happen a lot, so that's positive for them. But we're going to take a break. So, folks, I want to thank you all for tuning in to twitch.tv/HockeyNightNY and all your favorite streaming providers. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Rachel Dorey of ESPN will be joining us.
If you're an Islander fan, there's nothing like a big win, a tasty meal, and great company. And Blue Line Deli and Bagels provides all that and more. Owned and operated by diehard Islander fans, Blue Line Deli and Bagels happily serves Bagel Boss bagels and a full menu of delicious food and beverages. Whether it's breakfast favorites like pancakes and omelets, specialty heroes and wraps like the Hat Trick and the Hip Check, or fresh-made coffee and smoothies, Blue Line Deli and Bagels has you covered. So stop on in to the flagship location at 719 West Jericho Turnpike in Huntington, or the new spot at 217 Carlton Avenue in East Islip, for their familiar friendly service and the best food around. And don't forget, you can always check out the menu and order online at BlueLineDeli.com or pick up the phone and call 631-944-3222. Blue Line Deli and Bagels. Our goal is to make you a hero.
Thanks for giving some time to our sponsors. Ready to talk more aisles? The train rolls on right here on Hockey Night in New York.
Joining us online now is Rachel Dory, ESPN analyst and chief of innovation at Betalytics. So, Rachel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Happy to be back on with you guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty great. Good. This playoff race, Rachel, I'm not sure if you've been paying attention, is kind of tight in the East here. What are you making of these final four or five teams here really fighting for two playoff spots or three here?
Honestly, it's kind of nuts, right? You've got the final spot in the Metro Division. Tampa's free and clear, pretty much. They're going to make the playoffs. It's just a matter of if they can catch Toronto for that third spot, and then Toronto would fall into that first wild card spot. But I think those two teams are kind of free and clear. So you've got the second wild card spot and the third Metropolitan spot that are really up for grabs. And you've got Pittsburgh, the Islanders, and Washington and Philly fighting for the two spots, and then Detroit's trying to get into that final wild card spot. It's been wild. I can't remember when there was a playoff race like this where there was only like one or two spots and there were legitimately five teams that you could have any number of combinations and iterations that could make it. So it's fascinating. I love it. This is what the last week and a half of the season should be. I haven't liked the divisional format because I feel like you get locked into playoff scenarios too soon, and it feels like this is the first year in a long time where we're going into like the last week of the season and we don't really know how it's going to shake out.
Yeah, for sure. Welcome back to the program, Rachel. Great to have you back on. So you look at this race and you know, Stefan and I every week have to talk about this seesaw season, this roller coaster season that the Islanders have had. 1 week you think maybe they're out of it. The next week, like this one, they're back in. I don't know how much you've been watching from your point of view, but any thoughts on what's made this such a roller coaster season for this team? Obviously, you have the coaching change, but even afterwards, it's been up and down. What have you been seeing from your point of view?
Yeah, I mean, I always keep an eye a bit on the Islanders. Somebody that I have a really good relationship with is in management, and then, of course, a couple friends on the team. So I'm always keeping an eye on the Isles, if I'm being completely honest.
Okay.
I look at this season, and it's kind of like a microcosm of what I feel like a lot of fans have been saying and a lot of analysts, in the sense that like the Islanders sort of are what they are, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And this was sort of a season where you got to see all of that, right? If Sorokin isn't playing well, or as my buddy who's an Isles fan says, if Sorokin's caked, which means it's just a disaster, then the Isles are in big, big trouble. But when Sorokin is good and he's playing on his game, and he's been inconsistent this year, and I think that's a lot of what the Islanders have struggled with, he's on his game. It's one of the best goalies in the league. And so it's one of those situations where the Islanders aren't deep enough from a talent perspective to be able to withstand a goalie that plays below average. If Sorokin is good, but he's not superstar, I still think the Islanders are a playoff team. And then you have the inconsistency of the top line. I think Noah Dobson has been pretty good this season for the bulk of the season. Lately, similar to Quinn Hughes, I think he's fallen off a little bit defensively. But we're talking about a defenseman that took a huge, huge step this year. It was really in the Norris conversation and still is, in my opinion. And so I think he's kind of taken a step back. That's not helped the Isles. And then you've got everything up front where the Islanders really lack speed, right? There's not a ton of speed there. And with the way that the league is right now, especially in the Metropolitan Division, the Rangers are fast. The Canes are fast. The Devils, when they get any shred of goaltending, like they're fast. And I think the Islanders really have some trouble keeping up from that perspective. Where they've gotten themselves into trouble lately, they haven't been able to keep the puck out of their net. And that's a big problem when you don't have the speed to sort of keep up. And let's say the game-breaking talent to sort of blow a game open.
Yeah, what have you seen from, you bring up the top line and that question of who's going to play the wing, who's going to play the wing there for Horvat and Barzal. But what do you just make of the way Barzal's really taken a next step in his game, getting back to what we saw during his first year in the league?
Yeah, it's been, honestly, Steph, it's been fantastic to see. Matthew Barzal is such a supremely talented player. And as much success as they had under Barry Trotz, I felt like a lot of his creativity and a lot of his ceiling sort of got taken away because of the style that Trotz wanted them to play. And don't get me wrong, they had success, but I feel like you were holding Matthew Barzal back from really the player that he could be. Now that he's playing with Horvat, I think on the wing is kind of a great spot for him because Bo is a good center. Like, he's a quality center. And it allows Barzal to focus less on the two-way game and more on capitalizing on his supreme talent, his vision, his ability to pass the puck, his hands, his ability to create things out of essentially nothing. It really allows him, it frees him up to do that. And we've seen that in his point totals this year and in just how he's played. He looks a lot more fluid in his play. You can tell with the chemistry that he's developed with Horvat that they're really learning how to play off of each other now. And that's something where I think if Patrick Waugh can just say, hey, you guys figure this out, you still have to have your responsibilities from a two-way perspective, but I think Horvat sort of frees up Barzal to be the more skilled player that he's capable of being, and that frankly the Islanders really need him to be if they're going to be successful.
Yeah, no question about it. I think getting Horvat in there just kind of uncorked the potential that Matt Barzal has been showing us ever since he's come into the league. And I know you have a little bit of familiarity with Horvat back in his Vancouver days, the leader that he was. Maybe you can just share some insight on that and just maybe letting us get to know him a little bit better with you being able to spend time with him back in Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, Bo is a supreme human being. Like, I was surprised when he was traded to the Islanders in the sense that the Islanders were the team. But my immediate thought was, damn, like if you could build a player that fits the New York Islanders organization in terms of the culture that they want, but the fact that they need a two-way guy who could still put the puck in the net, that's just a really good sort of soldier, that's Bo Horvat, right? And so from a leadership perspective, I mean, obviously he's not wearing the C in Long Island, but in Vancouver, Bo was never the emotional leader. Like, he was never the rah-rah guy. That was very clearly JT Miller. I think we've all seen that. And he's taken a step this year. But I think with Bo, what you're getting, a consummate professional. You're getting somebody that every single day, pro details, whether it's off ice, like he takes care of his body really well, consistent routine. He's at the rink all the time, always looking to get better, always checking in on the younger players on the team. Like, I remember we had a young player in Vancouver who's going to remain unnamed, but I remember asking him about Bo and what made Bo like a good captain. And he said, like, basically for like the first 4 or 5 months, Bo was constantly checking in, making sure he was adjusting. Okay. Never paid for a meal. Like, none of that. Anytime they were out, it was always Horvat that's taking care of the young players. So he's sort of a guy that really brings a dressing room together in the sense of the fact that he is just a supreme professional, very much like an Anders Lee, like a Brock Nelson, Cal Clutterbuck, Matt Martin, like all those guys. He fits in. He's a bit of a better hockey player than them. And so when you look at it, you're getting a guy that fits in fantastic in the dressing room, that is going to lead by example. He's going to let his play do the talking instead of being that really emotional and vocal guy. He's just going to go out there, do his thing, have good habits, never going to cheat you for effort or anything like that. And it's really easy to get behind somebody who carries themselves that way on the ice, but then off the ice is just such a genuinely good person to be around.
Yeah, and we hear it after games. I mean, he speaks like he's a captain because he's been there before. I want to ask you something about his defensive play, because I think something that when he came over, a lot of Canuck fans were saying, well, he's not a great defensive player, things like that. And yeah, we were all thinking, well, he's coming here to take more of the defensive stuff away from Barzal. So I guess, what were your thoughts of the way you played defensively in Vancouver and what you've seen of him defensively now?
Yeah, I feel like he got a bit of a bad rap. Because Vancouver, I mean, let's face it, they weren't very good during his tenure. Like, they had that one playoff run that he was obviously a big part of. Him and Thatcher Demko were pretty much carrying them. But you look at it, and because Elias Pettersson was getting Selke sort of love right off the hop, I think it really kind of took like a backseat. But Horvat was on the penalty kill, and I'm sorry, but you can't tell me that a player isn't good defensively because the coach is not going to put them on the penalty kill if they're not good defensively. It just simply will not happen. And so, yeah, he might not be the elite 5-on-5 player defensively that a Sasha Barkov is or a Jordan Staal is or an Austin Matthews is. That's not what Bo Horvat is. He's a guy that can score 30 to 35 goals, that can penalty kill, probably ideally on your second penalty kill unit, and he's going to win his matchups. So yeah, he's not that shutdown center that's also elite offensively, but if Bo Horvat's your second line center, what you're getting out of Bo Horvat is you're getting a guy who's going to put up offense, but can also be trusted in some of those matchups. He's not going to be your primary shutdown center, but if he's got to go head-to-head against another team's second line, more often than not, he's going to win that matchup. And from that perspective, when you have a guy that can score 30 goals and you can play him with Matt Barzal, who can sort of really punctuate that offense and move the puck and get the puck and recover the puck, carry it, then it takes a lot off of Bo offensively. So I felt like in Vancouver, Bo was trying to be everything. He was trying to be the offensive catalyst, and he was trying to be the defensive player. And that's just too much for a guy like Bo Horvat. Whereas now, Barzal can really be the guy that drives the offense, and Horvat can become more of a finisher, and he can focus more on the defensive side of things. So I really think the reason that Horvat fits so well on Long Island is because in Vancouver, he was asked to do a little bit too much, and when he was playing really well offensively, his defense kind of suffered. And when he was playing well defensively, his offense kind of suffered. Now he's with Barzal, a guy who needed the defensive burden sort of taken away to free him up to do offense. And Bo is sort of the guy that can really do that. And that's why they play really well with each other. I think that's why you're seeing chemistry. But from a defensive perspective, I think in Long Island, he's been a good fit because he hasn't had to worry about offense as much. So I think he's been better defensively in the matchups that he's had, and you can really see it when the Isles are having success. That first line is absolutely dominant.
Can't agree with you more on that. They've been a really good duo, and you know, you had Islander fans here getting upset when they were split up for a little while. They got them back together, and they've been playing great. They've been putting big goals together, so hopefully they continue to do that. So, but you said that you've been keeping tabs on the Islanders, so I feel better about asking you this question. Patrick Waugh coming in here. What have you seen that he's brought to this team that's improved this team, that's changed this team? And ultimately, it's still a little bit of a short sample here, and we got to wait to see what happens over the summer and what kind of training camp he has and all that. But do you think that they've improved their standing here as a team in the league with Patrick Waugh as the head coach now?
I think you can't really say that they haven't, right? It's one of those things where, like, when Lane Lambert was behind the bench, I really felt like the Isles lacked an identity. That was something where I was like, I don't think this is going to go particularly well, because it kind of looked like one line was playing one way and another line was playing another way, and everything was discombobulated in the defensive zone. And so when I looked at the Islanders under Lane Lambert versus Barry Trotz, for example, they were very clearly an identity team under Trotz, and I felt like they lost a lot of that with Lane Lambert. Now under Patrick Waugh, like you said, it's a very small sample size, and I think it's really unfair to evaluate a coach without a training camp. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the most unfair thing anyone can do. So I'm going to like reserve judgment in terms of systems, because it is, in talking to a guy like Bruce Boudreau, it is really difficult to implement a new system when you're coming in midseason, because you don't practice all that much. And so I try and look at other things. And one thing that I've really, really noticed with the Islanders under Patrick Waugh is the commitment to each other. When they go into corners now, it's not one guy is going in and another guy's kind of holding back, and then the other guy is third high. They're going in and they're committed to winning the battle together. They're playing off each other well. It just seems like they're a little bit more of a team when they're on the ice. They're more committed to the forecheck. They're more committed to tracking back. They're more committed in the defensive zone. And while Ilya Sorokin hasn't been fantastic this year, I think they could have given up more had they not been good defensively right at the start of Waugh's tenure, when he kind of came in and set the standard for what is going to be acceptable defensively and just generally without the puck. That's where I've noticed the change, is that from a defensive perspective off the puck, they're much more dedicated to recovering the puck, to having their sticks in better places, to committing to being on the body and being more difficult to play through. And that's something that takes a while to adjust. And so, yeah, they're giving up goals that right now are going in. But I think with a full training camp next year, a lot of those goals are going to go away, because there's going to be a different system implemented. But a lot of the pillars of the dedication to off the puck sort of recoveries and the forecheck and how they play as a unit as opposed to individually, I think a lot of those are going to come through in Waz's system. And so that's sort of the main difference that I've noticed, is it just seems like they're playing more together now, whereas before it felt like there was a lot of individual play, and that has never historically worked on a Lou Lamoriello team. And so now I think Waz got them sort of playing in a more cohesive sense, and that's why they're a little bit more successful now.
Yeah, you nailed it there. It's support. That's been the biggest thing I've noticed, is that they're supporting one another, whether it's going into, you know, Watt talks about the second quick all the time, which is a term where it's second guy pinch to put more pressure. So let's go to the playoffs, back to the playoffs again here. If you had to pick right now the teams that you thought would make it, bias aside, what are you thinking here?
Yeah, I mean, I look at the strength of schedule, right? Pittsburgh is in so tough. Brutal. They've got Boston, Toronto, Tampa, Nashville, but then they've got a crucial game against the Islanders and a crucial game against the Red Wings. If the Penguins have any chance, they have to beat the Islanders and the Red Wings in regulation, no holds barred, and they probably need to win two at least of those other really hard games. Then you look at the Islanders, they got the Rangers twice and the Preds, but then they get the Habs, the Devils, and of course that Pittsburgh game. I think when you look at it, they're in tough in the sense of that Pittsburgh game is going to be crucial. They absolutely have to win the Devils game and the Habs game, and they need to win one of the games against the Rangers, I think, to sort of keep pace. Because when you look at Philadelphia's schedule, they've got Columbus, the Habs, the Sabres, and the Devils, and the Caps. So I think that's going to be, put it this way, if Philadelphia and Washington play a three-point game and they continue on their clip, those are going to be the two teams that get in. I think you're kind of looking at a situation where the Islanders probably have to win 5 of 7 to get in. The Penguins probably have to win 6 of 7. And whereas Philly and the Caps probably have to win 4 of 6, maybe 3 of 6 to get in, as long as they get like a loser point type of situation. It's just an easier path for both Philly and the Caps. So I think if I were betting, that's probably who I would have in there. But I think the Islanders are probably going to be closer to the pack. I don't see the Red Wings being able to hang on, given the fact that they've got to play the Rangers, the Leafs, the Caps, and the Penguins. I think they're going to lose some of those games.
It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. It's going to be really tough. And the last one I'll leave you with, Rachel, do you have any dark horses for the playoffs this year? Obviously, we don't have everybody set in place, but we all know who the powerhouses are. We all know who the favorites are. Is there any team that you're looking at as we head into mid-April and you're saying to yourself, this is a team that can do some damage?
Yeah, I would not want to play Nashville at all. Frankly, if Mark Stone and Thomas Hertl are healthy, I definitely don't want to play Vegas because Bruce Cassidy has done a supreme job of deploying his defense. He's got Noah Hanifin on one pair, Shea Theodore on one pair, and Alex Petrangelo on the third, on like another pair. So at any given moment, one of those three guys is on the ice, depending on the pair. And that is a nightmare to try and score against. So if they start getting some of like two of their top six players back, they're going to be a major, major problem for everyone in the Western Conference. So I look at the two wild card teams in the West. I mean, LA, depending on where they fall. I don't want to see Nashville if I'm anyone in the West, and I definitely don't want to see Vegas if they're healthy from anyone in the West. The East is more of like a complete crapshoot right now. I mean, Boston is where they are because they've lost like 15 games in overtime, which is crazy. Florida, outside of last night, looks absolutely awful. The Leafs are wildly inconsistent. You got the Rangers that are like pretty good, but we're not really sure. You got the Canes that are really finding their stride, but have kind of stumbled of late. And then I don't trust Philly or Washington. So it's kind of one of those things where like anything could happen in the East and you don't really know. Whereas like the West, whoever gets Nashville and Vegas in the first round, that's a problem.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I agree with pretty much everything you said there. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's just awesome that we're kind of watching the playoffs before the playoffs even start with this stuff going on in the East. But Rachel, outstanding stuff. Really appreciate you coming back on. Pleasure to have you. And congrats on the new gig with ESPN. And hope to talk to you again soon.
Of course, guys. Yeah, I'll come back anytime. Go Isles.
Go Isles. There
Thanks,
we go.
Thanks, Rachel, so much.
There we go. That was Rachel Dorey, ESPN analyst. Great stuff from her.
Always great.
Yes, indeed. So now I'm going to tell all you peoples about Main Street Board Game Cafe in Huntington Village on Long Island's North Shore. Games for sale and for open play, food and drink, beer and wine, fun and friends. Bring the magic of phones down, eyes up, tabletop board games to your family. Our staff will help you find the right game, from old favorites to the hottest new releases. We have everything from strategic to easy party games. Get off your screens for a night your family will remember. Looking for meetups to join? Our Magic the Gathering, Dungeons and Dragons, Lorcana, and organized play communities are welcoming for all. We also do parties and corporate events located at 307 Main Street in Huntington Village. Go to mainstboardgamecafe.com for more information. Main Street Board Game Cafe. Find your crowd. Unplug your game. And with that, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, we're going to get into what's on tap.
Attention all artists, storytellers, and creators of all kinds. It's time to make your content stand out above the rest. And Floored Media is the place to make your visions become a reality. Maybe you want to elevate your podcast and add some video, or turn that novel you wrote into an audiobook. Or maybe you just need the right space to produce your daily vlog. Whether you're a seasoned veteran or just starting out, and no matter the project, Floored Media has the professional facilities, exceptional staff, and intimate atmosphere to breathe life into your creative passions at every step of the process. If it's engineering, production, live streaming, or post-production, you name it, Floored Media does it all. Conveniently located in the heart of Rockville Center and only a 30-minute ride from New York City on the Long Island Railroad, your creative incubator awaits. Go to floredmedia.com for more information and email contact at floredmedia.com for packages, rates, and availability. Hone in on your unique voice and start your project with Floored Media.
And now, it's time for What's on Tap, a look ahead at the Islanders' upcoming schedule.
That's right, folks. We're going to look ahead at the Islanders' upcoming schedule, and it ain't going to be easy. And we're looking at tomorrow, Saturday, Nashville, Barry Trotz coming back to Long Island.
He's coming home.
He's coming home. Well, Nashville is home. He went back home.
He's coming to his one of his homes.
He's coming back to his vacation home.
His cottage, yeah.
But I still miss the man. You know what? I'm glad he's in his hometown, or Nashville at least, and he's obviously doing very well. They just recently went on a tear, 16-0-2, I believe, before a little three-game losing streak. I think they won their last game, but Nashville obviously is a serious, serious team this year, and Saturday is not going to be easy, just because the Islanders don't typically do well against Nashville to begin with.
What's it been like since 2011 they haven't beat them?
Probably.
Like
I didn't look back that far, but... But it's going to be a tough game. I guess at the very least, it's at home. It's not in the afternoon. So they got a shot here. It's not the second of back-to-back. So maybe they got a shot, but going to be a tough game. What do you see with Barry Trotz coming back here from?
It's going to be an emotional return. Every time that Barry's talking, he hasn't spoken so much about it. He's been on a couple of podcasts, but he loved his time here. He loved the fans. Yeah. He loved the building. He loved the team. I mean, this was a very close team that, you know, he became not like a dad for them, but when you're watching, I mean, he had like a teacher for them. And
sure.
He taught a lot of these guys how to play the right way after years of just go have fun and go run and gun and things like that. Like Brock Nelson owes Barry Trotz a lot. To me, anytime I ever talk about Nelson, his career for me didn't start until Barry Trotz got here. Turn him into the player that he is. Even Matthew Barzal, understanding the 200-foot game, sure under Lane Lambert, he kind of eased up on that. But back with Patrick Roy, again, is not a defensive system, just wants him to play well defensively. If they don't even have those building blocks under Trotz, it's such a harder thing for Roy now to instill. Whereas those guys had 75 to 80% of a mindset of understanding what he's asking. Again, if it was just Doug Waite to Lane Lambert, Roy's got a lot more work that he has to do to get them to understand the importance of the little things. Trotz taught that. So I think it's going to be emotional for a lot of those guys who went to battle for Trotz for a very long time. I don't think Anthony Bevilier is going to be in the lineup. He's been a healthy scratch for Nashville, but he's coming back. And we all know about the goal he scored, and he always talked. That'll be, unless he does something in the playoffs for Nashville or down the road, that'll be the greatest goal he ever scores in his career.
Right.
And his best friend's Matthew Barzal. He's coming back. And I just think, and for all the Islander fans too, there was never a chance to say goodbye. Ever. For both sides.
Right.
So I don't know if they'll show him. They'll probably show something on the board for sure.
Absolutely. You talking about Bo or for Trotz?
For Trotz.
Oh, they're absolutely going to do a video. The best run since the cup run.
No, for sure. And I just think it's going to be emotional. Yeah. The question is harnessing that. We saw when Patrick went back to Montreal. It was great. It was emotional from the Montreal fans, but it kind of paid into Montreal's favor there, and they came out on fire and put up the goals. And again, that's a different situation where Waugh going back there. The Islanders are going there. Mm-hmm. The Islanders being home, you're hoping that Trotz coming back for a team that's played pretty well down the stretch here, that it has the effect that it had in Montreal for the home team. Right. Where the Islanders have Trotz coming back saying, you know, we are so proud of the way we played under you. Now let's beat you. And that emotion's there. Yeah. And that's, again, having the fan support. I'm not, there's no way to measure that, but the fans got to be loud tomorrow. The fans got to be in it. There can't be. There's a lot of times I'm not blaming the fans for losses. The Islanders haven't helped themselves. But when the Islanders fall into that getting dominated for a period, the fans aren't cheering, which, again, the fans shouldn't be cheering. And Waugh has spoken so much about how, you know, the fans are booing us. We deserve it. But tomorrow is one of those days that if the Islanders go down earlier, things aren't going the way, they need the fans to get them riled up because this is a huge game. Forget Trotz coming back. This is so monumental given what's up next after this
game. Yes. Yeah, no question. And look, the Islanders, fairness to them, they've given them a reason to cheer. Four of their last five, three in a row. They're back in the playoffs. They're in a spot right now. We'll see what happens in 24 hours. But this is a team who's competing again. And you got the welcoming back of Barry Trotz. And it's a Saturday night. I think this is a great night to get some energy from the audience. But, yeah, the Islanders also got to continue to earn it throughout the night. They got to have a good start. And we'll see how it goes. But, you know, I'm not putting any money down on the Islanders for tomorrow. But, look, it seems like they got their minds in the right place. I've said this before, but I think they're going to give the Preds a game tomorrow night. Am I predicting a victory? No, but I think they're going to give them a game, and I think they got a shot. I'm not looking at tomorrow saying, it's Nashville, no chance. I think they got a shot tomorrow night.
And the one thing I'll say, and we've talked so much about this in screening goalies, UC Saros is one of the shortest goalies in the league. Mm. You have to get bodies to this guy. He's very good goalie, but when you have undersized goalies, like Fedotov, you could screen Fedotov all you want. He's looking over you.
Right.
You're shooting it low where he actually have to look down. Mm-hmm. Like Saros is one of those guys where you have to get bodies because he's like Sorokin. He's got reflexes that are elite and things like that. You got to take away. And I think the Islanders have done a really good job over these last three games in crashing the net. You're seeing a lot of those, even like against Mrazek. Yes, he was seeing the pucks, but his rebound control was off. And the Islanders were getting the rebound chances and not bearing. But against a guy like Saros, who's so talented, you got to crash the net because he is a smaller goalie.
There you go. And then we move on to Tuesday. The New York Rangers riding a 8-2-0 in their last 10. Obviously, we're familiar with the Rangers. We know what they've done the last couple of games against the Islanders. Top team in the league right now. That's going to be a tough one, and they play them twice.
Statement game. Sure. You got embarrassed outdoors. You got embarrassed at MSG. To the point in that MSG game, to me, it was like the Harlem Globetrotters playing whatever their opponent was.
It wasn't
where
pretty.
Every play that the Rangers made in transition.
Yeah.
Every time they had the strong side here, weak side was wide open every time to make a pass there. And the passes were on the money. You're thinking, this is the difference. You have a team that's a fringe playoff team to a team that, again, the Rangers are not a great 5-on-5 team, but they're at the top of the division. They're a very good game when they get good goaling, but their transitioning showed light years of how far off the Islanders are from being that. But we saw in the 6-game winning streak, the Islanders went on that they can transition like that against very good teams. Yeah. And you're seeing over these last three games, again, the opponents, the Flyers were dominating them a little bit, but Chicago wasn't great. Columbus isn't great, but San Jose wasn't great. Anaheim wasn't great. Mm. And you saw them transition with ease and just getting in the mindset early of we're going to transition. We're going to make those crisp plays. You got to come out strong against Rangers like that. You cannot sip. If you sit back for 5 seconds, it could be 1-0. And at that point, if the Rangers get into that transition groove and you're not forechecking, not making the simple plays, you're done.
Well, the good news for the Islanders and their fans is that Hockey Night in New York isn't hosting a tailgate or a viewing party for either one of those Ranger games. So I feel like their chances have increased because they are 0-2 in those scenarios.
And actually, it is a 7 o'clock game on Tuesday.
Correct.
Not a 7:30.
National? It's got to be, right? Because that's at UBS.
Yeah, it's got to be.
And they like their 7:30 start, so it's got to be a national
thing,
right?
That's the difference there, too.
Half an hour, 30 minutes.
Hey.
You never know. And then, of course, the Saturday game is 12:30. Not great. Not great for the Islanders.
Hey, but they had not won back-to-backs the entire year to the last one. This is their last day game.
Could that be the afternoon game that the Islanders take?
Best for last. It's cliche, but...
You never know.
Yeah.
And then sandwiched in between the Ranger games, Montreal comes to town. That is a 7:30 start. 4-4-2 in their last 10. Just another one of those games like Columbus, like Chicago, you got
to
win.
You have to bury this team. One, it's different than going to Montreal, like you said, the emotions, but Rachel nailed it. your schedule is too tough. It's like Sorokin in goal. You got to stop the shots that you are capable of stopping. The other stuff, you need more help. But against the Habs, you have to win that game. You cannot, they can't blow that game and lose in overtime. I mean, in theory, could they lose that game and still make it? Yeah, but then you got to win two against the Rangers or, you know, win an extra game there. It's just not ideal, especially depending on what happens in that Ranger game, you know, momentum or bounce back. Like, either way, you need that game.
And not for nothing, I'm kind of dreading that 82nd game against the Penguins. Like, as a fan, I hope the Islanders have something locked in before that game. Because the Penguins are coming off three big wins. They scored 15 goals in those last three games.
Crosby,
They obviously have their eyes on the prize right now. And as Rachel told us, they have a brutal schedule coming up. So that's one thing that's kind of playing in the Islanders, the Caps, the Red Wings' favor. They're also a little bit further behind the pack. But they have a tough schedule, but they're playing lights out right now. And they're beating good teams. So I'm kind of like hoping that the Islanders can set themselves up, or at least maybe the Penguins get beaten up a little bit by these good teams before we get there, so that it's not high drama, because we've also seen that the Islanders have lost a considerable amount of those big games over the course of this season.
I want to know who made the schedule, because either it's rigged in terms of making everything late in the season, or just job well done, because the games that happened late, Islanders finishing against the Penguins, I forgot the other matchups that finished that last game of the year where that could really...
Well, Detroit plays a home and home with Montreal.
Yeah.
So again, that's another situation that can really end up screwing these other teams.
I agree with Rachel, though. I don't think Detroit's going to end. I actually do think Pittsburgh will, because I just...
Really?
I have a hard time betting against Crosby. I just...
They got to beat some really good teams.
Yeah, I know, but it's Crosby. How can you bet against a guy that... I feel like Penguins...
I feel pretty good about it.
I feel like every
I like doing that.
I feel like every year the Penguins late... I mean, this is a lot later than they usually do, but like March, they kind of just turn it up. And this year, they're turning it up now.
Right.
I have a hard time betting. I think the Flyers are going to fall out just because there's one of those young teams where...
Yeah, I was actually a little surprised that Rachel seems to be on the Flyer bandwagon. They've only won two of their last 10. They're not doing great. They're obviously... We don't know what Fedotov is going to do now. Tonight, he actually got the start. Maybe now's a good time to go to the Snake Den just to ask for a scoring update. Do we know what's going on around the league right now?
Yes, we do, and nothing's great.
Oh, no.
Flyers and Sabres are tied 1-1.
That's
going
okay.
to overtime. Mm-hmm.
Capitals are up 2-0 on 7 shots, by the way. Ovechkin scored twice.
Who's in net for Carolina? Ready?
Is it Piotr?
It's Kachekov.
Kachekov.
And then the Rangers and Wings are tied at 2.
That's okay.
This is all in the second period right now.
All right, you made it sound a little worse than it could have been. The 2-0 thing isn't great against Carolina, but a tie score I'm okay with right now.
Yeah.
That's all right.
We'll again, if the Capitals do win, they switch, obviously, but... The Islanders, if the Flyers lose, the Islanders, I mean, again, this is not, the season doesn't end today.
No.
I think Islander fans would want it to end today because then you eliminate everything happening when you face the Rangers.
Sure.
But yeah, the Flyers are one of those teams for me that they're so young. And again, Torts is doing a great thing, but his press conference the other day, I don't know if you saw it or listened to it. Oh, we had talked about it. It was probably one of the best press conferences I've heard outside of Paul Maurice stepping down in Winnipeg. That was the best press conference I've ever heard. But he said, you know, I have to do a better job at getting them to understand that we are here for a reason, but we have to play a little differently now because it's not the same. We have to bear down. I think they remind me of the Devils. They get into the playoffs last year and they do beat the Rangers, which probably should never have happened. But you gotta learn what it takes to win in those big moments. So I think the Flyers could fold under pressure with how many young guys they have and how much they rely on these young guys. So that's why I don't think the Flyers
are playing with house money.
But again,
none of us thought they were going to be here.
We talk every week. They're going to fall. So,
yes,
I mean,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So,
they've earned it. I mean, congrats to, you know, credit to Tortorella, credit to that team. They're
Keith
young.
Jones, everything.
Just didn't
done
think that they were going to be at that level yet, and they've kind of fast-tracked their rebuild a little bit here. So they're probably going to be a pretty dangerous team next year. But hopefully they do wait until next year and they continue to kind of drift out of this competition here. But it's just fun to watch, not only, you know, because it's just great hockey seeing all these teams being in the mix, and it's extra special now because the Islanders are in there and hopefully they got a shot. So with what's on tap out of the way, why don't we talk about heroes? Ladies and gentlemen, when you hear this song, that means it's time for the Hero of the Week, brought to you by the Blue Line Deli and Bagels Half Price Hero, which this week is the Celly, featuring grilled roast beef, sautéed onion, and fresh mozzarella on a toasted garlic hero. Yum, yum, yum. Stefan Rosner, who's your Hero of the Week?
My Hero of the Week is somebody that has been disrespected this entire season.
Okay.
And it is Islanders captain Anders Lee. Now, I'm not going to say that he hasn't had a tough season. There were times this year that buyouts were kind of creeping into your head thinking, what are they going to do with this guy?
A lot of money.
Well, you talk about a leader needing to lead off the ice and on the ice. And over this three-game winning streak, has he been an unsung hero for them. He's got a goal and assist. He doesn't get the assist on the empty net goal by Kyle Palmieri last night, but it was his hard work in their corner to tie the puck up, feed Palmieri. It was his hard work in their corner that fed the front of the net. For Holmstrom's goal, he's got 8 shots and goal over 3 games, but the other thing is he has 5 blocks to lead forwards. So I think Anders Lee's been great. Quickly, I just want to touch on Cal Clutterbuck being a second hero here. Okay. He has been nominated by the PHWA as the Islanders' Masterton Award winner. And for people that want Clutterbuck gone and they compare him with Martin, the same, Clutterbuck's had a fantastic season. Yeah. He's on pace to play in all 82 games for the first time in his career.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow, I didn't
know that.
He's reached
1,000 games.
I mean, I know he's hurt most years.
And he's probably hurt right now.
I didn't know it was every year.
Yeah, he has never played 82. Wow. He's on pace for that. Hopefully I didn't just jinx that for him. My bad, Cal.
Nice job.
Reached 1,000 games.
Right, yes.
Became the first player ever to record 4,000 hits, which he did against Florida. He's got 7 goals, 12 assists. He scored some big goals as of late for this team.
Yeah.
And overall, this fourth line over these last 3 games is also an unsung hero because they've kind of looked like the old fourth line with McLean down the middle. So kudos to Cal Clutterbuck for the accomplishments for a guy that's 36. The only player that's older than Benoit on the bench as their assistant coach.
That's funny.
He's had a great season.
Yeah, no, I think he's a good honorary mention there for sure. But I am going to go with Bo Horvat. He had 3 big goals, a big goal in all 3 games this week. And I feel like him, and I guess along with Anders Lee, they're kind of willing this team into the playoff mix and maybe into the playoffs. I think he's been outstanding. Another great year for him. It's nice to see a guy come over from another team because I remember this kind of also being a little bit of a narrative, right, where he put up all those goals in Vancouver last year and everybody's like, oh, well, when he goes to the Islanders, he's going to fall off, right? And he's proven now, full season here, and he's right on pretty much the same pace. A few less goals, but it looks like he's going to be right around that 70-point mark that he was at last year. And he's been outstanding. He's been great, and he looks great with Barzal, as we talked about. And it was a big week for him, and I think he deserves a little hero celebration.
I guess the positive is that it's kind of getting hard to pick the heroes. I mean, Kyle Palmieri, how can you not even – we'll talk about him maybe in a little bit. Just he reaches 25-goal mark. He's been healthy all year.
Right.
He's been probably the most consistent forward on the entire team since Waz got here.
Sure, absolutely.
So I think, like, he's had a great year. And I think Cizikas, you got to credit him, too, being an unsung hero, going on the top line. I mean, he played wing once with Barzal last year, scored in Seattle. Remember that goal? Mm. But he's not a top-line player, but he does what you have – again.
I think he serves a great purpose because of the type of player he is. You like to have a nice grinder out there for two talented players like Barzal and Horvat, so I actually don't mind that setup at all.
And this is the argument to bring in an elite player to play on that line. If you bring in an elite player to play on the line, not saying they shouldn't do that, but that might be a guy that wants to possess the puck, and you're taking away puck possessions from Barzal. It's not going to work. Zeke said, I know I'm playing with very talented players. I got to put my head down, win battles, get them the puck.
Exactly.
That's what you need on the line where you have a guy that could pass the puck like Barzal, a guy that could finish like Horvat. Again, Anders Lee was great for a little bit with those lines, but he's a little too slow getting to the net. Cizikas has the younger legs and has just that ability, innate ability to get there quicker, which helps with the screens because it doesn't matter if you get to the net, if you don't get there while the shot's coming or things like that, the goalie's going to see it. So I think Cizikas, again, Lee's been great where he is, which is probably showing signs of what's going to happen next year if those guys are here, leaving a third line player. He's playing it well.
He is. He's doing a great job. So, folks, that'll do it for the heroes of the week. Remember, stop on in to the Huntington Blue Line Deli and Bagels location. Mention Hockey Night New York for half off the celly. And now it's time to go to the Snake Den.
Welcome to the Snake Den with Jake the Snake.
Welcome to the Snake Den. Jake the Snake, you gave us a score update before. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, you know. This has been a great show.
You've been watching.
Yeah, no. I believe it or not, I have front row seats.
Excellent. All right, cool.
But yeah,
cool.
I'm doing good.
Awesome. So do you have a take for us, more importantly?
I do. So I just want to touch on how crazy this NHL season is.
Okay.
There's, what, 4 teams a point out from each other in this wild card race?
Yeah.
Not only that, the President's Trophy race is even crazier, too, with that.
Yeah,
You got, like, 5 teams vying for the President's Trophy, and you wonder, does some of these teams not even want it based on the past?
The curse.
The curse, for sure. It's truly crazy, and, you know, last week I raised the white flag on the Islanders.
You did.
I did do that, and I can't take it back, but
you can.
Okay,
you can do whatever you want.
Okay, fine, I'll take it back. I think they're going to get in.
You fool!
But that could change tomorrow. I have no idea. But that's what this whole season has been.
Tomorrow, that could change in 25 minutes.
It could change in 25 minutes.
It's what this whole season has been, though, really. Like, one
so
day
that's all
it's
it
like,
took. 1 week and you're back on the wagon.
Yes, but very cautiously. Very cautiously.
He's not buckled into the wagon. He's hanging out the side.
Okay, you're ready to jump off.
This is an Oregon Trail wagon. This
Watch out for the distance.
Don't get tuberculosis.
One foot in, one foot out, I guess, is where I'll say.
All right, so you're being an optimist. You're back on. So obviously that means you think that they're going to get in again.
I do, but very, very cautiously.
And like, who's getting in with them?
It's so tough. It's really so tough. But
you have to answer me.
I mean... Pittsburgh's been crazy right now, and Sidney Crosby.
Oh, you're jumping on the Stephen bandwagon.
No.
You bet against him.
Sidney Crosby in April now, like, it's ridiculous. Mm. But I honestly, if I had to pick one team, I do think the Flyers get back in. Just because of Torts.
Interesting.
I think Torts is going to light a fire under them again and be like, guys, we have this. We had this the whole year. We can't screw this up now. And so, I think they find a way in.
Okay.
But Pittsburgh does scare me, and also Washington. They bought into their rookie coach.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's hard to really project who's going to be in.
Yeah, I guess that's true. While we're on the topic, Stefan, do you have a prediction? Do you want to give a prediction?
Yeah, I think the Islanders will get in. I really do think they get in as the favorite.
I mean, it makes us both look good long term, right?
Because we'll just cut this. But right. I think they get in as the third. I really do. Okay. I don't trust the Flyers at all.
I'm with you there.
I'm going to stick with. So I think the Capitals too. They have the veteran leadership.
Okay.
I'm disagreeing. They're not getting in.
Oh.
But what I will say, same with the Flyers, is that the Capitals have the veteran leadership. Uh-huh. They have a lot of young guys in this lineup who have to learn what it takes to win. And Charlie Lindgren's been unreal. Mm-hmm. Darcy Kemper's won a cup. Do I trust Charlie Lindgren? The big moments. These are big games for sure, and he's played well. But last week of this season, you have two games left. Charlie Lindgren's someone that has to prove to me that he could do it in a big game like that. And they rely on a lot of young guys in that lineup. So... it's good that Ovechkin for them, that Ovechkin's scoring goals in the big moments here. I don't trust them. Again, their defense has been good, but I don't trust them. I don't want to bet against Crosby. He's been so hot right now. And I think losing Gensel, not that was a good thing. Nobody won. Like, if you're a Penguins fan or you're the Penguins, you hated that.
Of course.
But they're kind of rallying with the pieces they have right now. And that's a dangerous team for me.
Yeah, for sure. It's similar to what the Caps are doing without Kuznetsov, right?
And I think the Red Wings have no chance.
Okay, that's fair. So I'm going Isles.
Sean, who do you think's going to get in?
I'm going Isles and Caps.
Well,
I'm the happy-go-lucky optimist on the show, right? So I'll say that the Islanders get third place. Mm-hmm. And I think the Caps will get the second wild card. But, like, I could see it flip-flopping there. That wouldn't shock me. But I think it's going to be the Isles and Caps. I'd like to see the Wings get in. I think that would be fun. Young team to get Larkin back. They start to play better. I think they'd be a lot of fun to watch in the playoffs. This is another team that have kind of branched away a little bit from the Ottawas and the Buffaloes, where they're starting to look like an up-and-coming young team here. So that would be a lot of fun. I'm tired of the Pens. I'm tired of the Caps. I'd like to see the Wings and the Isles get in, but I think it's going to be the Caps and the Isles.
With the Red Wings, like, Alex Lyon was hot for a while, and then he cooled off, and James Reimer flops like a fish. Like, again, he's very...
been around for a long time.
He's one of those goalies, though, that is... you watch him going, this looks so wrong. But at the end of the day, he just make the save.
Right.
When the Islanders played him, they kind of shot it into him. He made some good saves, but from his belly.
And he let in that bad one, too, that first one.
Yeah, the Riley one, right?
Yeah, that was not good.
Yeah, you know, it happens. You know what they say.
What do they say?
I can't curse.
It's time for questions brewing, is what they say.
not just yet.
Not just yet. But Jake, thank you so much. So now that we've escaped the snake den here,
we're out.
Touch base here on Isles Fix, Islanders Country. Get your daily fix of Islanders news, highlights, and analysis by subscribing to Isles Fix, the only Monday through Friday Islanders newsletter sent directly to your inbox. Sign up for free or become a paid subscriber for added benefits at islesfix.substack.com.
There you go, islesfix.substack.
It's really the only one, Stefan? The only one.
Well, the only one we know of.
I love these guys because, one, they do support my stuff, and they don't have to every day.
Sure.
They put different stuff in there, but usually my stuff's in there, articles, which... very much appreciated.
Yeah, no, they do an excellent job. They have clips of all the goals in the email.
Oh, it is the wake up in the morning.
They break it all down. Yeah, no, it really condenses everything together, and you literally, I mean, you couldn't have named it any better. You get your fix. Yeah. Your Isles fix.
That was beautifully read, Stefan.
So how are we doing back here, boys?
We're good. Jay was a little close to the camera. He was almost in shot today, and I warned him.
But now is that
it's
right?
Only, now it's only asleep, but his whole head was in here before, guys.
So,
you missed it.
So before we get into questions, Ron, Jay, I see that you're wearing a NASCAR t-shirt. Do you support the sport? Do you watch the sport? Is it just you like cars? Or is it just a shirt you found in the drawer?
The dumpster, yeah.
That's right.
Oh, you were hired by them.
That's right.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, it's too bad you don't have a microphone to tell us about it.
We don't have time anyway.
Maybe he another told me time. He didn't change his shirt because he woke up in the earthquake today with that on. He woke
that
up.
That must have been something. You were literally woken up by the earthquake.
Yeah.
That must have been a bit startling. But you survived. You survived. Yeah, well, you're here. You made it. You made it. Floored Media is still standing.
Yeah.
We made it.
Anyway. Right.
And now it's time.
We're doing it?
We're doing it.
Welcome to the Snake.
That's the wrong button.
Yeah.
We're not doing that.
I like the theme song.
It is a good theme. It is a good theme song.
Time for Questions Brew. So go ahead. Ask us a question.
All right. So I want to start off with Mr. Tom Boyle.
Oh, all right. Sure. Let's do it.
He has the most recent question. Do you think the Bo Horvat and Barzal duel is the best since Trottier and Bassi?
That's covering a lot of time.
That's a lot.
That's covering a lot of time. Is it better than Palfi and Reichel? Well,
I was just going to say that I wouldn't relate it to those guys because you have to go to Breeson if you're talking about the best since.
Yeah, right. No, we're not comparing them there. Like, we are. That's not even something we have to talk about. But you look at what? Palfi and Reichel. You look at Yashin and Isbister.
Look at Vanek and Tavares.
Vanek, Tavares, Oposo. Molson, Tavares, Parento. I mean, I'd say it's right up there. I'm sure maybe we're leaving something out, like Yashin Chetan for a little while there. I mean,
I was a baby.
Is it too early to tell?
No, you know what? I think it's a good question, and probably, and maybe there's somebody in the chat that could say, hey, Sean, what about these guys? But yeah, that you might be right. Horvat and Barzal may be the best duo in a very long time. Although you have Turgeon and Thomas, or Turgeon King, they were great. So I know that's before your time, Stefan.
Yep.
But, you know, they had that run to the conference final. But I would say they're right up there. Yeah, Tom, you might be onto something, buddy. Good stuff. Yeah,
I think the best duo is Tom Boyle and Questions Brewing.
Wow.
Yeah. That is a dynamic duo.
That is a dynamic duo.
The definition of dynamic, because the mood swings.
Sometimes it runs cold.
But it's always running.
It's always running.
Tom, you definitely have a left and right wing when it comes to whether the Islanders are winning or losing. Your questions definitely change. All right, next up from CGS878. Dobson had a reasonably good first half of the season. What happened to him in the second half? His fundamentals. Yeah, it's tough read. It's a tough read. and the assumption of losing all fundamentals in the second half. I don't know if he lost all his fundamentals.
Wow, we are going from, reasonably good. I mean, Rachel was just reminding us that he was a Norris Trophy candidate for a good portion of the season. I think you got to give him a little more credit than reasonably good.
All right. This guy...
Lay down the law, buddy.
Mike, I wish I could drop the mic, but it's attached. You have to wait for me to say what I'm going to say. You had Noah Dobson last year. Defensively, the offense was there, and we knew the offense was going to be there, but because he was struggled so much defensively, Lambert was riding him as the third pair with Sebastian Aho, and when that's the case, you're not going to play a lot of minutes because in those big moments, you're not out there.
Right.
The biggest thing for me this year has been his defense.
He wants to clarify it's facetious. Oh. I thought something was a little off.
We don't have the context here. You're reading it off the screen. We don't know if he's joking around or not, but that's good to hear. I'm glad to know that he actually didn't think it was only reasonably good.
Yeah. Anyway, we've seen a drop-off in his defensive play as of late, probably the last 15 or even under Watt, to be quite honest. And this is shocking because you'd think he'd be better and be able to jump in on the rush. We haven't seen the offense either. First goal in 12 games,
right.
Second goal in 21 games last night, which, by the way, that was a...
Huge.
That was a shot.
Sure was.
If that doesn't get
what is it called, Stefan?
A blanket. What's it called?
Yes, you are. Your adrenaline flowing?
No.
Your juices flowing?
No. God.
We'll get back.
He's very happy with the way now he's playing. Wow, I'm blanking on the easiest
That's
word.
That's it. That's what
we
you
talked about. Holmstrom scoring. What it did for his
fantastic.
Mental. No. Forget it. We'll come back.
His confidence.
Yes. There you go.
There you go.
Oh my God.
The C word.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
His confidence.
His confidence was lacking, but also he was playing so many minutes when Pelech, Pulak, Mayfield, Aho were down 30 minutes a night, top pairing minutes, being trusted in those situations, playing on his offside, playing on the penalty kill, playing on the power play, that I think it's similar to what happened with Sorokin last year is he is tired. Whether it's mentally or physically, he was playing a lot of minutes. Now he's playing less minutes, which I think makes him try to do too much now with the minutes he's getting. And again, when you overthink out there, you're going to make the defensive mistakes. I think he's been a little weak defensively. I think it's weight on him not producing offensively because that's what he's here for. But then he's playing with Pelech, where he doesn't focus too much on defense. Now he's playing with Romanov, who at times has struggled defensively. Now he has to get back and make defensive plays. We saw the other day where he was soft allowing Marchenko to just lift the stick and hit the shot off Sorokin. But I think for Dobson, it's just, you know, he's played in the league for 5 years, but he hasn't played that many full seasons. I think he's only his third full season. He's still 23. So I think you have to look at what he did in the first half or three-fourths of this season and be proud of the defensive play he's had. He's got to find it again.
No, this is Noah Dobson confidence. Breaking out as a bona fide number one defenseman. Mm-hmm. And he was pretty much consistent from the beginning of the year until now. He finally hit a rough patch. Obviously, the timing isn't great, but hopefully this goal boosts his confidence and he ends up, you know, getting back to that point per game pace that he was at throughout the first three quarters of the season. And it's funny too, because I remember us seeing, you know, watching the preseason, talking about it, post preseason, pre regular season,
roasted on social media,
right? Didn't he disable his account or whatever? And it worked wonders for him.
Yeah, it worked. And then more players should probably do that.
Yeah, I think so. But look, he's been outstanding. And I'm sure he's going to be a big factor in whether or not they get into the dance.
And these are important learning moments, too, for a young player.
Again, timing not great, but I think we can forgive a few games off here, you know, for such a great season that he's been having.
Fantastic, Stefan. Thomas Panic says, questions brewing for Sean.
Thomas Panic is in the chat?
Thomas Panic.
The Thomas Panic?
This.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, at the disco, everything.
Nice.
Questions brewing for Sean.
Yes.
As a fan, what would be worse? Isles miss the playoffs by a point, or they make it and get swept by the Strangers in round one?
Yeah, I've been seeing some discussion about that on Twitter. Listen, I would rather jump into the fire, make the playoffs, see what happens. Would any of us like that result? Of course not. And are the odds in the Rangers' favor if we do get that first round matchup? Of course. But I am always going to say, jump in the fire, see what you can do. Like, listen, fan however you want to fan, but I really don't subscribe to that whole, I'd rather them miss it just so I don't have the embarrassment of them losing, you know? Like, no, man up or woman up, you know? Like, get in there. Let's watch some more hockey. Let's watch the Battle of New York in the playoffs. We haven't seen it in decades, and you never know what can happen. Go ahead. Stefan.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. I thought you were done there.
It's for Sean.
I'm never done, Stefan.
Apparently, you're not a fan.
I'm not.
You know?
Yeah.
That's why it's not for you. To do.
I thought he was going to ask Sean who his favorite co-host
well,
was.
You can still opine.
Yeah. put yourself in Sean's shoes.
You can still opine on whether
what I'm
going to
say
the mindset
is, for one, fans that do root for the team to miss, hoping that there's changes. I actually have a story coming out tomorrow morning on this because, no offense to the fans that...
I love how you figured out a way to plug yourself with this question. That's pretty good.
The fans that... Well, I'd rather... that to me, no offense, guys, that is the dumbest thing I hear and see, because for life's too short, where you see so many teams just get in. Look at last year. Panther fans are probably like, well, I'd rather miss the playoffs than go in and play the Boston
Bruins.
Let's
get a high pick and regroup next year, and then look what happens, right?
And this is what I'll say about going and facing the Rangers. In that series when Florida played Boston, the odds were in Boston's favor. All of the pressure was on Boston, and look what happened.
Yeah.
The Islanders faced the Rangers. The Islanders lose that series from the outside point of view. They're not going to be happy, and I don't think they'd get swept either. Let's be real. The playoffs are a different animal, but the Islanders are going to believe they could win, but for that, it's all the pressure's on the Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
So that allows the Islanders...
And that whole rivalry dynamic is just... It sets the whole thing into a wild card situation.
And again, 5-on-5, which is why I think we've talked about it before, is if the Islanders can get back to playing the 5-on-5 they played on that winning streak, the Rangers' biggest crutch this year has been their 5-on-5 play. If you stay out of if you go into the box and you take the penalties, you're done. You're done. But if you play more often 5-on-5 and games go to overtime, where it's in the playoffs is 5-on-5, not 3-on-3, where the Islanders have struggled, and there's no shootout... I think people got to stop worrying so much about the Rangers. If the Islanders play the way they're capable of playing, which we've seen for, you know, we have to see more of it, but nobody, unless there's no team I think the Islanders should be terrified of if they could play that way. And it's up to the way they play.
You know what I want to see happen? I want to see the Islanders get the third spot in the Metro, beat Carolina, and then meet the Rangers for the division title. How about that? That's what I want.
How about them apples?
But I will take a wild card 1-8 matchup or whatever, the 2-7 matchup if it works out that way. Let's go. Let's see it.
Nice. One last one from Tom Boyle, and I'll ask again, if anyone has any further questions, just type in questions brewing. Just a reminder for our friends on YouTube and Twitch and Facebook, if you're just tuning in, now's the time to ask a question. Tom Boyle, do you think Sorokin is playing hurt, or is he worn down from the heavy workload?
I think everybody's hurt at this moment, and that's not a cliche. I do think
physically,
like,
or emotionally,
everything. This has been one of those seasons that, if I mean, I'm not an NHL player, but it's so hard to explain when things are going wrong. That takes a mental toll on you. Physically, all the blown leads, the extra time you're playing. I think everything's wearing. And Sorokin, again, he's not slow going or like moving. So injury wise, I think everything's tight at this point. But I think it's all mental with him. I think it is the workload. I think it dates back to last year, not just this year, is the way you lose last year. I mean, he's a very mentally strong guy, but how much he had to bail this team out last year, how much he had to bail this team out in the... He's overthinking out there with the fewer amount of shots, which you could tell.
I think his performance against Columbus showed me that it's a little more mental. Just like being out of position, very dramatic, you know, sways from one side to the other. Yeah,
that one slide that got blocked, where if it's shot at the middle of the net, it's going in. He's oversliding, overcommitting.
Right.
To me, it's always been mental, never physical. That being said, he's probably exhausted. But this is a guy that takes great care of his body. These are athletes that are used to this kind of workload and things like that. But it's all mental, which again is why it's important for him to snap his losing skid the other day, even when it wasn't good. In the big moment, he made the big save. That's huge.
I want to attach a bonus question to this. Mm-hmm. If Sorokin is still shaky, let's say they get into the playoffs, but Sorokin's shaky, Varlamov probably gets a couple starts between now and the start of the playoffs. Who's starting game one?
I'm a real firm believer in riding the hot hand. If you're going into the playoffs and Varlamov's been the better goalie over the last couple of games, you start him. Because we've seen it before. Remember when Varlamov got hurt, Sorokin starts a series against the Penguins.
Yeah.
They say it's cliche, but when you have two good goalies that can not just keep you in games, win you games, steal you games,
okay,
you need them in the playoffs. You need both, whether it's injury or not. So I think for me right now, Varlamov's going to go against Nashville. That's what Wah said yesterday. Mm-hmm. He probably would go there. Mm-hmm. He wins that game. He starts against the Rangers. And if he keeps winning, you keep running him. If he loses, it's gonna be a judgment call for Wah, and it could backfire immensely.
Sure.
Or it could pay dividends. But I trust Varlamov more right now just because at the end of the day, structurally and the way he's positionally sound, that's something that he doesn't, you know, he's so consistent with that. Even when he's struggling, maybe it's rebound control. Even that's not even an issue. Mm-hmm. He's not the athletic guy, but he lets the shot hit him. And the rebound control is what allows the defense to kind of breathe. With Sorokin, he makes a great save, but if he's diving left and right because he's out of position, more shots, that's making it more chaotic for his team to break the puck out, things like that. So right now, for me, I would be riding Varlamov.
Okay.
Quite frankly, depending on, again, it also depends how they lose these games. If Varlamov, if they lose tomorrow, but it's a 1-0 loss. Again, if they lose 6-5, you're putting Sorokin in the next game because you're allowing 6 goals. But I just really love the way Varlamov's played, and he's a veteran guy that's been in these situations before and have gotten big wins for this team. I'd ride him.
Okay. I'm glad I asked the question because that's not the answer I was expecting. Good stuff. You got one more for us, Ed?
No. No one's chiming in.
Okay.
No one's chiming in.
Okay, fair
enough.
We're
not inquisitive tonight. It's a Friday night.
I give everybody who's been hanging out with us credit for hanging out on a Friday.
Got one more Snake Den score update?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, let's do it.
So the Sabres took a 3-1 lead.
Hey!
The Canes, now it's 2-1 Capitals.
Okay.
And the Rangers and the Wings are tied at 3 now. And Barclay Goodrow scored 2 goals. I can't believe it.
What?
And where are we as far as how much time is left in the Ranger game? What period are we in?
So everything's in the second.
Okay, a lot of time.
Yeah. So actually, Sabres, Flyers, that's an intermission now.
Okay.
Caps, Hurricanes, same thing. And yeah, Strangers again, gotta go.
That Flyers
intermission as well.
That's, again, the Islanders don't need everybody to lose. They just need at least one of them.
Yeah. At least. I'll take one.
So big third period's coming up here.
Okay, so it could end up being a really good night for the Islanders.
Or really bad. Yeah.
We don't know yet. We don't. It's true. Well, I think with that, we can wrap it up. Cue that music. And here we go. I want to thank you all for tuning in here at twitch.tv/hockeynightny and YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, all over the place. Really appreciate you guys hanging out with us live and getting involved in the chat. I want to send a big thanks to Rachel Dory of ESPN, ESPN analyst over there. Great stuff from her as always. And of course, want to thank our wonderful sponsors, starting with Blue Line Deli and Bagels, located at 719 West Jericho Turnpike in Huntington and 217 Carlton Avenue in East Islip. Check out the menu or order online at BlueLineDeli.com. Also, a big thanks to Main Street Board Game Cafe. Check them out at 307 Main Street in Huntington Village. Find out how to unplug your game at MainSTBoardGameCafe.com. And, of course, a big thanks to Razor and Kniff, attorneys at law. Nobody likes going to court, but if you have to, call 516-742-7600 for a free consultation. And, of course, want to thank Jake hanging out in the Snake Den with the great Jake's Take. Yes, indeed. I think we're going to have some more fun with the Snake Den going forward here. We'll see what happens. Maybe, maybe not, but good stuff there. Folks, also want to remind you, of course, to rate, review, subscribe. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your acquaintances that you dig what's going on here at Hockey Night in New York. And Stefan Rosner, where can we find you in the world around us.
You want my address? No. I live on Earth, shockingly, I know. But no, you can follow me on Twitter, X, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Stefan_Rosner. Hopefully people know how to spell it by now, but I'll say it again.
Sure.
STEFEN_ROSNER. The Hockey News, Islanders, Rangers, NHL.com, and this lovely lovely platform we got here.
Yes, indeed. You can follow myself on the Twitter at Shawnee Hockey. You can follow Hockey Night in New York at Hockey Night NY on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, every which way, every which where. And with that, we'll be back next week, actually, and we're going to be coming at you from Blue Line Deli and Bagels, a little afternoon engagement. That's right. We're going to be hanging out with Donnie Bagels. Going to be a lot of fun over there. He's actually raising money for a great charity, so we're going to get involved with that. It's going to be a lot of fun. That will be sometime in the afternoon, I think around 2:30, but stay tuned. We will let you know. So with that, folks, for Stefan, for Jake, for Ed, for NASCAR Jay.
For the earthquake.
I've been Sean Cuthbert. We've been Hockey Night New York. And we'll see you next week.